He'd be covered in blood all over his shirt, all over his hands, his wrists, on his face.
In rural Connecticut and Massachusetts, blonde, blue-eyed girls disappear without a trace.
I looked back once. That was the last time I ever saw her.
He kept them down in that dirt cellar, and he was always burying something in the backyard. Always.
Could they all be victims of one monster?
If the killer has the girl in his vehicle, it's already too late.
This is the person of interest. I mean,
I'm M. William Phelps, crime author, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer. Because he is one. July 26, 1973. In the quiet town of Tolland, Connecticut, a blonde, blue-eyed girl rides her bike along a forest track behind her home. Janice Pocket is just 7 years old, and it's the first time her mom has let her go out on her own.
I remember my sister asking, "Can I go on my bike up the road to get the butterfly?"
Janice's younger sister, Mary, remembers it like yesterday.
A couple days before, we had gone for a walk, and she had found a butterfly. It was dead, but it was perfectly in perfect shape. She had tucked it very neatly under a rock on the dirt road where we had been walking. And she had asked, can I go and get the butterfly? And my mom said, okay, go, but come right back.
What could be more innocent than a kid looking for a butterfly, not 200 yards from her home, in a tiny, tight-knit community where everyone knows everyone? At least, they thought they did.
The next thing I remember is walking up the road holding my mom's hand.
Janice?
Looking for my sister because she hadn't come home. When we got up the road and went around a curve, and there was her bike, you know, laying on the side of the dirt road. That's the last thing I remember about that day.
Janice!
Just my mom calling her name and calling her and calling her.
Janice!
In the week that follows, more than 800 volunteers join the search. Scuba teams dredge ponds. A National Guard chopper hovers overhead, and local businessmen and donors stake a $10,000 reward. But Janice is never found. Do you think that Janice is still alive?
I don't. No, I don't. I think she's probably buried somewhere, or in somebody's basement somewhere, or I don't know, but I honestly don't think she's alive. I mean, as much as I want to know what happened and who did it, even more, I just want to find her and bring her home so she can rest in peace. You know, that's my number one, you know?
A little over a year later, and just a few miles away in Vernon, another girl, Lisa White. This is Prospect Street in Vernon, Connecticut, where Lisa White, 13 years old, left a friend's house one day, started walking right here down this street, and disappeared. Her body hasn't even been found. It's personal to me because I went to school right there. I went to school with Lisa's sister, April. And I remember the time. I mean, with Lisa White and Janice Pocket was another girl. These two names were synonymous with a ghost walking the streets of Vernon, Tolland. A ghost walking around, snatching up little kids. And you know, you looked at April as she walked through the hall, and yeah, she was beautiful and gorgeous and all that. But there was this shadow behind her. Shadow of a missing sister. I knew their mother, Judy, too. She always wanted me to look into Lisa's case. And I promised I would, that I'd find her some answers. But before I could, Judy died in 2012. I've been dreading this moment coming up here. I don't know, it's strange. It feels like I don't belong here. And I think part of that is because Judy's gone. Because Judy would have been here with me, standing here with me, talking about her daughter and where her daughter went missing. But she's gone, like her daughter. So I go speak to April and see what April can give me.
She had strawberry-colored blonde hair, and she had blue eyes, and she had the most beautiful smile.
April is Lisa White's kid sister. They grew up dancing together. Yeah, when you were kids, what were her dreams?
I think she wanted to be a dancer. It was a major part of our life. My sister just excelled, especially with the more powerful tumbling. She was an incredible tumbler. And she just seemed to pick up, but she had no fear of anything. I mean, she was just a risk taker from the get-go.
Talk to me about the days leading up to Lisa's disappearance.
I knew that she was hanging around people that she shouldn't have been. And my mother was very angry about it. And they were young men, actually, you know, able to drive. Now, sometimes she would stay out late, but she would never stay out all night. I just remember the next morning was a Saturday morning, I believe, and we were supposed to go to dance lessons. My mother was scrambling around the house on the phone, and I didn't know what was going on. And I said, "Where's Lisa?" And she said, "Never mind, just go to dancing with your grandfather." And after that, it was just a mess. I had to go to school, and there was a poster, and it said missing, and it was my sister's picture on it, and it broke me. That's one thing I remember seeing. Go to the grocery store, the one grocery store we had in town, and you would see missing. And then go to the library, and missing, and be my sister.
Officially, Janice and Lisa are still listed as missing. But anyone familiar with these cases knows what's more likely. They were abducted and murdered, I believe, by the same predator. The thing about this guy is, he gives away what he likes with his victims. He gives away that he likes blonde, blue-eyed, young girls.
As long as she's a blonde, she fits the bill. This killer sees one of these girls, then moves in, quick snatch and grab, he's gone.
I know another killer who preyed on a certain type, which is why it's good he's in a cage. He's caused enough pain and suffering for 100 lifetimes. And now he's paying for it with back-to-back life sentences. He's a chained animal. I call him Raven.
Okay, Raven.
Janice Pocket and Lisa White.
How do you think this killer lured them?
I think there's an opportunity. You drive down the road long enough, sooner or later, something's going to stand out in front of you.
Why is he choosing blonde, blue-eyed girls?
Maybe somewhere in his family, where his first victim was death in nature. Maybe that was his first sexual experience as well. Maybe that's exactly why he's going back looking for that same look-alike person that might give him that same sexual release.
What's it like? You've crossed that line and decided to kill her. What goes through your mind next?
It is the location where I'm going to put the body. I decided before I even kill where I'm going to go with it. Where I'm going to get rid of it. Because you got to have a plan.
There's no doubt Janice and Lisa's killer had a plan. Because 40 years later, there's still no sign of their remains. But would he be so careful with his next victim?
We're looking at a predator who was really quick to react. And within seconds, he's got that girl off the street and into the car. That fast. This isn't the first time this guy's done this.
Criminal profiler John Kelly is describing the abduction of 10-year-old Holly Perinian in 1993. He believes it's linked to the Janice Pocket and Lisa White cases based on the MO.
This guy's moving at lightning speed because he doesn't want to get caught. And you know and I know that 76% of stranger abductions by these predators, the poor victim's killed within 3 hours.
I'm at the corner of South Shore Drive and Allen Road in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. It was here that Holly Perinian went missing while on vacation with her family.
Right here on this road, this is where Holly Perinian was abducted. One of her sneakers was actually found right on the road here. And John Kelly thinks that maybe Holly's case is connected to Janice Pocket and Lisa White in Connecticut, just over the border. The question is, are they? We know that Lisa White and Janice Pocket, we know their abductions were similar to this. You know, the side of the road, near the woods,
in the middle of the day.
You have three girls, similar in age. They could be sisters, the three of them.
To get the full story, I'm meeting with Holly's father, Rick, and brother, Zachary.
Here's just Holly and
that's
Christmas.
Holly, the Christmas before she was murdered. She was a happy kid, very well adjusted. She wanted to be a 10-year-old's dream, a marine biologist, work with dolphins. And she was like the leader of the kids. She had almost like taken over as their mother.
Single dad Rick Perinian describes Holly the way he likes to think of her, the way she was, until the morning of August 5th, 1993.
The night before, we discovered a litter of puppies up at the end of the road at a farmhouse. So she had asked if she could go up and see if the puppies were out yet again. So I had said, thinking of the buddy system, I said, yeah, you can go, but take your brothers, and only one of her brothers wanted to go.
Holly's kid brother, Zach, goes with her.
I don't know, it was a nice day out. It seemed like a beautiful day, blue skies, you know, nice weather, a little bit of a breeze.
Suddenly, 5-year-old Zach is frightened by a loud bang.
You know, I told her I wanted to go and all this, and I was scared, and, you know, I walked home, and I looked back once. That was the last time I ever saw her.
Just minutes later, her dad realizes Holly's on her own and goes to look for her. But all that's left of Holly, along the dirt track leading home, is one of her little red shoes. Rick calls police and a search begins. But there's no sign of her.
How are you feeling as her father as night falls?
Totally helpless. I've never been so helpless. I mean, there was nothing I could do, and in the back of my mind, I was already thinking the worst.
Days turn into weeks, then months, and still nothing.
And what's the first piece of information you really get, and when?
Probably the first piece of information is when they finally found her.
And that's 3 months after Holly disappeared, in Woodlands, just a few miles from where she was last seen.
It was the first day of bird season out there. One of the detectives said, "We found something in the woods, and we want you to come out to Sturbridge." And I had asked, and they said, "We found the other shoe," which I pretty much had a gut feeling that they had found her, too.
Police believe Holly's remains were dumped at this location on the same day she was abducted. To get more information, I'm meeting former Massachusetts State Trooper Bob Benoit. In 2000, Benoit develops a person of interest in Holly's case. He can't be named, so I'll refer to him as the woodcutter.
We ended up interviewing a lot of people. One of them in particular had overheard the woodcutter confessing to the death of the Peranian girl. I said, "Well, okay." And I said, "What did he say?" And he said he was crying. He says he was crying, and he was like real drunk. And he said, "You know, we didn't mean to kill her. We didn't mean to kill her. It was an accident. You know, we hit her with the car, and we were driving too fast at the time. And, you know, and all." And he says, "We both were drunk and on high on drugs. We didn't want the police to be involved, so we..." The kid says, we took her and we put her in the car and we buried her in the woods."
Benoit investigates the woodcutter and his accomplice, a friend who was allegedly driving the car. But there's not enough evidence to bring charges.
It would be great to get these things solved. I mean, it'd be great because it never goes away. You know, I'm looking at the poster over there. A lot of cops around here have that poster. They have it in their house. Might have it in their garage as a reminder. They have it. You know, I got a couple of pictures on my desk at home. And, you know, it just never goes away.
If the woodcutter and his friend are responsible, it blows away Kelly's theory about these three girls being connected.
I think I need to find out if I can, if Holly Peranian, if her body showed any signs of being struck by a car. I think for me, that would make sense, because I've seen cars come around that corner at 50 miles an hour. And if those two guys were drunk and they were driving and she was running down here, they could have easily struck her. They could have easily panicked. They could have wrapped her in a blanket, picked her up, because her body was dumped 3 miles away, basically off the side of the road. So that makes sense to me. But sometimes things aren't what they seem. Rick, do you think Holly was struck by a car and maybe the person panicked?
I don't think so, because what I have been told by the police, there was no evidence of blunt trauma or any broken bones. There wasn't really any evidence. It was a dirt road. You would have seen skid marks, and there wasn't even a burnout mark. I didn't even see a tire track, because that was one of the first things I looked for was tire tracks.
Have they ever told you what her cause of death was?
They figured that it was probably strangulation.
Strangulation? This is exclusive information. Never before released to the public.
It casts severe doubt over the car accident scenario.
There's no evidence to support it was an accident. Someone intended to do this. You know, just a bad person, you know.
Holly's murder changes her brother Zach forever.
I grew up my whole life never trusting, you know, anyone older than me, really. Never, you know, feeling safe when I was alone. Most of my life, I always carried a weapon on me. Basically, just built up a lot of hate. I mean, I've had problems with alcohol and stuff.
Since the tragedy occurred, Zach is literally haunted by the face of a man he believes killed Holly.
There's just this image always popped into my head of who, for some reason, like, that's what I thought the person looked like.
In 2005, with the help of a sketch artist, Zach produces a composite of the man in his nightmares. Is it simply the product of a tortured mind? Or did Zach see someone that day?
I've gone to therapy, and they seem kind of convinced that I probably had seen something, but I didn't remember it. And maybe that was what the loud bang was.
Is that loud bang just a five-year-old's way of suppressing a more frightening memory? The memory of Holly's murderer. And if it is, will Zach's sketch help bring justice to the family?
I don't think justice could ever do what needs to be done to this person.
With Holly, the abduction MO definitely matches the earlier victims. But without the bodies of Janice Pocket and Lisa White, we can't know if they were killed in the same way, too. What does strangulation say about this predator?
You gotta take into consideration she was strangled. That means this guy's not afraid to get up close and personal with a young girl. Now, it's sickening when you think about it.
In rural towns along the Connecticut-Massachusetts border, three blonde girls have been snatched by a predator.
Well, what you're looking at is a pedophile who's a sexual sociopath and psychopath, okay? I mean, he's all of those. You know, he likes younger girls, little girls. He doesn't care how they feel, how their family feels.
Janice!
He has no guilt, no remorse. The most dangerous of all the boogeymen. He's the one parents go to bed at night fearing.
Similarities in the three cases suggest they may be linked. Lisa White, Holly Prinian, Janice Pocket. They look a lot alike. Their abductions were similar. Side of the road, the sun shining. He's abducting kids in the middle of the day. They're all grabbed within 30 miles of each other along the Interstate 84 corridor. And then a fourth girl. And another more disturbing link. In 1993, shortly after third victim Holly Peranian goes missing, Molly Bish, another blonde girl from nearby Warren, Massachusetts, writes a touching letter to Holly's parents. "I wish I knew Holly," she writes. "I hope they find her. She is still in my heart." Just weeks later, Holly is found. Murdered. Then, in June 2000 in Warren, Massachusetts, just 10 miles from where Holly was taken, something uncanny, something unbelievable occurs. Maggie Bish drops her 16-year-old daughter, Molly, off at Cummins Pond, where she works as a lifeguard.
Love you, Mom.
Alone on the beach, Molly prepares for another day of watching the kids who come here with their families to swim. But someone is watching her. just minutes after her arrival, she's abducted. The connection between these two blonde, blue-eyed girls is just incredible. One girl writes a letter to the other girl's parents, and then she goes missing herself under really the same circumstances 7 years later. Is it just a bizarre twist of fate? Or is Molly a victim of that same predator? In the woods behind Cummins Pond, I'm meeting with an ex-cop who was one of the first on the scene, retired policeman Tim McGuigan.
Her chair was set up. There was a towel over the chair. Her flip-flops were still there. And the first aid kit was open.
Was Molly simply checking that her kit was fully stocked? Or was it something more sinister?
Whoever the person was who took her may have used a ruse to say, I cut my finger, I hurt myself. And Molly, being excited about her job and being very good at her job and proud of her job, would obviously want to help this person.
McGuigan interviews the woman who discovered Molly was missing.
She saw what she described as a swath going up the hill. Now, if you look at this hill, it's very steep, which would lead anyone to believe that someone was taken up that hill against their will.
McGuigan learns that from the time Molly is dropped off at the pond to when the woman notices she's gone, just 10 minutes pass.
The window of opportunity for her to be taken is very, very small, which would lead me to believe that this is somebody who's probably very organized. I think that whoever grabbed her knew her routine.
Tim's hunch is backed up by an incident the day before. When Molly's mom drops her off, she locks eyes with a strange man in a white car.
She stated she had kind of an uneasy feeling about that. She saw this man kind of stare at her.
With Maggie Bish's help, police later produce a sketch of the man. They wonder, was he stalking Molly? And as the investigation continues, their suspicions grow. Turns out, on the morning of Molly's abduction, someone else had also seen a white car near Cummins Pond.
If you came up from where the swath of that pine needles where that woman described, if you went to the end of that trail, there's a cemetery. Where that person would have parked. And the cemetery worker said that he saw a white car fitting the description that Maggie had seen the day before.
Police mount the largest search in Massachusetts state history, but Molly isn't found. 3 years pass before her skeletal remains are discovered in woodlands just a few miles from Cummins Pond. So right over here is where the white car is spotted the day before Molly goes missing. There's a man with a mustache in it, smoking, tossing his butts out there. The question is, was he waiting for her? And why didn't he grab her that day? Why did he wait till the next day? Maybe because Maggie Bish saw him. So what's very significant to me here as I walk up on the beach is that I can't see the beach. There's a ridge right here. The parking lot's there. So there's the 10-minute window of opportunity Molly's abductor had, because from the parking lot, you can't see the beach where Molly Bish was. But if you just walk up this way, the water begins to appear. So there's the beach. And there's the lifeguard station, the chair. So if she's abducted from that area there, no one on the other side of this ridge could have seen it happen. Her abductor had to know that. This guy planned this thing down to a science. He knew exactly what he was doing, exactly who he was grabbing, and exactly when he was going to do it. He knew it. If this is the same predator who abducted the other three girls, is he growing smarter with each victim?
If we look at the abductions, White and Pocket in the 70s, they were kind of hasty, quick, snatch and grab. And then we look at Molly. Molly's abduction was planned. Absolutely planned. So there you have the evolution of a serial killer. Am I right?
You're right. When you look at the way Cummins Pond is laid out, this is a hometown guy who knew the area and who surveilled her, who watched her, who stalked her. This was no novice. This guy didn't miss a beat.
A carefully planned, premeditated crime. Let's see if Raven agrees.
People say that there's premeditation and there's no premeditation. Every murder is premeditated because you have that chance to not do it. But you have to make a conscious decision to do it.
What if the girl starts pleading for her life?
If the killer has the girl in a vehicle, it's already too late.
Would this guy have known the places where he abducted those girls?
He's from the area. He may very well be unemployed. He has time enough to do these things without being caught up with time of day, break out of the day. I think he's probably a drifter to some extent. Likely he has a tendency to go out hunting because it gets a long time for a solitude to think.
Raven confirms it. This guy plans his crimes. And he's given us some new profile points to consider. Kelly has one more to add.
I think this guy takes photographs. If he takes pictures, he's going to be able to relive the fantasy a lot longer and in a more profound way.
Between 1973 and 2000, four blonde girls are abducted in similar circumstances in New England. The search for the most recent victim, Molly Bish, gains national media attention.
Pond, where the 16-year-old lifeguard was abducted in 2000.
And makes American parents more wary than ever before.
You know, as a police officer, you want to stay somewhat hardened to this. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to do that.
Molly's case affects ex-cop Tim McGuigan so deeply, he leaves law enforcement in 2001. But even then, he can't stop looking for Molly.
I ran into a hunter who had found something, and he didn't understand the significance of what he had found. He had found a lot of things in the woods, mattresses, bed sheets.
Right.
So he didn't put it together. But as soon as he said a bathing suit.
Why would a bathing suit be in the woods?
Exactly.
We're on Whiskey Hill in Palmer, Massachusetts, 5 miles from where Molly was abducted. McGuigan has taken me to the spot where that bathing suit was found in June 2003. It's the kind of terrain only hunters would be familiar with. And sure enough, rifle fire echoes nearby.
That's the spot.
Right here. You're having an emotional reaction to this again. I mean, time doesn't do anything, huh?
No.
In the days following the discovery of her bathing suit, Molly's skeletal remains are found scattered on the hillside.
What kind of guy does this?
I would describe this person as a mission-oriented, organized, intelligent person who plans things out.
Methodical.
Methodical, yes.
Someone who's done it before.
Someone who's practiced, yes.
And who will do it again.
Won't stop. Can't stop.
In 2009, a strong person of interest is identified in the Molly Bish case. I can't use his real name, so we'll refer to him as the Hunter. He lived in the area when Molly disappeared, was known to fish where she was abducted and hunt where she was found. He matches the description of the man in the white car. And right after Molly disappeared, he fled Massachusetts. What I want to know is, could this be the guy who snatched all four blonde victims? To find out, I'm meeting with the Hunter's ex-wife and his daughter. They're risking a lot by talking to me, so I have to keep them anonymous.
So thanks for meeting me. I greatly appreciate it. I know it's not easy, and this is heavy stuff. Describe yourself when you met your ex-husband, what you look like.
Long blonde hair, the blue eyes, small, tiny, you know.
Blonde, blue-eyed, and petite. Just like the four victims.
These are some of the cases that I'm working on. That's Holly Perinian. This is Lisa White. This is Janice Pocket. And this is Molly Bish.
Oh, my God. This one looks like me. This one looks like me when I was younger. This one looks like me, too.
That reminds me of what Raven said about this predator having a type.
Talk me through a little bit where it started to go wrong.
Right after we got married. He just became more cruel and more psychologically abusive. And then, of course, the physical violence started. And then he started to abuse her as a baby in the crib. He was hitting her.
And was he abusive to animals a lot?
Oh, yes.
What would he do?
He would keep them for a while, and he kept them down in that dirt cellar.
At one point, he bought me a kitten, and one day it just wasn't there.
Now, he starts to hunt, right? Or he's a hunter?
All the time.
And describe that for me a little bit. He would go on hunting trips with his brother?
Yeah, and he would come back sometimes till the next day.
Did he bring home a lot of game? Deer? No?
No.
He'd be covered in blood, all over his shirt, all over his hands, his wrists, on his face, and you know, he'd just say he was hunting. But when I realized that he wasn't bringing any meat home, I didn't believe anymore that he was hunting animals.
What'd you believe he was hunting?
People.
You ever see him carry bags, tarps, anything like that into that basement? Like leave his truck or something, go in his trunk, go down there?
Oh, yeah, and he was always burying something in the backyard. Always.
I'm looking at these cases with him on my mind. He's a person of interest. Do you think he's capable of killing that many women?
Oh, definitely.
And more.
Definitely. Women, children, animals, it doesn't matter. He will hurt them.
Was he ever sexually abusive to you?
Yes.
He was?
Yes. He put me down in the basement, and there was this chair down there, and he had my hand there and these vice grips.
And that's when we left.
That was more than 20 years ago. The hunter's daughter is now a grown woman. And his ex-wife is remarried to a man who treats them kindly. I don't want to dredge up any more bad memories, but I've got one last thing I need to ask.
I have a sketch that I want you to look at, and I want you to just, as soon as you see it, just tell me who you think it looks like. What comes to mind, okay?
Uncle.
That's. Yep.
That's my uncle. That's his brother.
Yep. That's my ex-brother-in-law.
Unbelievable. It's the sketch of the man Zach Peranian sees in his nightmares. The man he believes killed his sister Holly.
and it matches the hunter's brother. Would the hunter go see his brother often?
Oh yeah, definitely.
He was probably the one that he went to go see the most.
Could the hunter and his brother have been working as a team? And not just in Holly Peranian and Molly Bish's abductions, but in the abductions of Lisa White and Janice Pocket. My two sources tell me the hunter's brother used to live in Connecticut, in the neighboring town to where those first two victims went missing.
When you have the hunter's brother living in between Lisa White and Janice Pocket, near the time that they're both abducted, boy, you have to connect them just on that alone, I think.
You have to.
I remember laying in my bed at night and being worried that a monster was gonna come and get me.
Could one monster be responsible for four abductions over 30 years? If that is the case, we believe he'd fit this profile. He's focused on young blonde victims.
This guy has a blonde in his fantasy. It could be because somebody really excited him or hurt him and his family.
He's local to the Connecticut-Massachusetts borderlands along Interstate 84. At least he was when the crimes occurred.
We have a predator that has been working for decades in these areas.
He learns with each victim, becoming less opportunistic, more methodical.
He knew what she did all morning long. He's been watching her.
And the worst part, we believe his crimes are sexual. Right now, I'm looking at a person of interest who fits this profile to the letter.
The hunter spoke to one of his ex-wives and one of his daughters. Horror show. Absolute horror show. These people lived in fear. These people lived in hell.
The hunter abused his wife and tortured his daughter. Maybe he tortured those four girls, too. It's hard to understand how anyone could be capable of such evil. Maybe Raven can explain.
Is there some sort of monster that takes over? Some sort of devil?
I don't think it's a monster. I think it's just wanting to do this. We're not monsters. We're not animals. We're human beings. This is what humans do. I mean, not humans. This is what is in our nature. We go ahead and do what we
want to do. Raven, do you believe you're mentally ill?
Mistakes? Tell that to the grieving families. But the scariest part is, if murder really is that trivial to a killer like the hunter, what's to stop him from doing it again? I'm heading back to Vernon, Connecticut to meet again with Lisa White's sister, April. I know now I can connect the hunter to this area because his brother used to live nearby. Can April make any more connections for me?
I have some photos. Just to explain a little bit, we've developed a person of interest.
I can't show the photographs on camera, but I can show April's reaction. First up, the hunter.
This is the person of interest. I mean, does
that jumps out at me.
You've seen this guy before.
I know I haven't. I could tell by my reaction.
Next, I show April the hunter's ex-wife beside a picture of Lisa.
This is the hunter's wife at the time that Lisa was abducted. Look at the pit. Look at the two of them together.
I thought that was a picture of my sister when I looked.
Yeah. Quick. They're identical. They're identical.
Lastly, I show April another picture of the hunter from the early 70s when Lisa was abducted.
That's another picture of him in circa the same time.
I don't know. There's something there. And just the cold chill that just comes over me.
When I first interviewed April, she said Lisa had been hanging around with older guys the night before she went missing. Could the hunter have been one of those guys?
He'd have been in the age range of 18, I'd say, 18 to 25, something like that.
Which is about the age of the boys my sister was with that evening.
April's reaction isn't evidence.
I don't know.
But it's a reason to look closer at the hunter as a person of interest in Lisa White's case. And then there's this. In late 2012, police retrieve what might be victim trophies from the hunter's former trailer home.
Hair combs, barrettes, and scrunchies that are seemingly teen stuff.
The disturbing collection of girls' trinkets are found along with violent pornography.
Massachusetts State Police boxed many of the items for a trip to the state crime lab.
This new evidence is being examined right now. If any of the items match to Lisa, Janice, Holly, or Molly, then we'll know for certain if the hunter was involved in their abductions. And if police make that connection, well, they know where to find him. The hunter is currently serving time in a U.S. prison for murdering his former girlfriend. As for his brother, he's still out there. But at least now, he's on the cops' radar. I'm thinking about my promise to Judy Kelly before she died. And I'm feeling good about it. Because for the first time in maybe 35 years, that case is moving again. And that makes me feel good. But investigators still need your help to bring Lisa White and Janice Pocket home. And bring justice to the families of Holly Pernian and Molly Bish.